Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. I'm Tyson Harley. And recall that here and there I have shared with you some essays, if you will, that I just find truly some of my favorite things. And today I want to share with you not so much a public domain essay, but something similar where I'm just going to read it. I'm going to keep it anonymous. It's not really, it's, you know, publication per se. And so I think that's okay. It's pretty short. I'm going to keep it anonymous. If you can find it, great. But part of the reason I'm keeping it anonymous is that I just honestly don't like the platform that I went to. The person happened to say that it was here and I saw a preview. It got my attention and I kind of went against my usual rule and went ahead and looked at it. And I really like it a lot. So I'm just going to go ahead and read it out loud. But first, for example, just as an occasion to tell you about some other things I've done, I want to tell you about a couple of other quick rants of truth that are really my favorite things. The Scales of Truth 024 was a reading of Eye Pencil by Leonard Reed. That is an outstanding essay about free enterprise and the miracle thereof, true free markets. And then secondly, more of an inspirational one, although I do consider Eye Pencil pretty inspirational to understand the philosophy. But then also, The Scales of Truth 023, reading of Isaiah's job, Long Live the Remnants. And hopefully that will help you be a part of the remnants and understand that you never know the effect that your activism and your passion might have. So now let's go on to this other one that I found, and I just got to say, it's just incredibly well written. And you know how, you know, you follow people that you end up liking, and so invariably you find those folks' information, and you like them because they're articulate. So I'm going to keep this anonymous, because again, I wouldn't usually want to even share this platform. There are a lot of platforms I don't believe in anymore. And so since this isn't on, say, Telegram, or is it on some of the other ones that I still believe in, I don't even really want, I wish this person would have posted it to one of those others. So nonetheless, to preview this, let's just call this constitutional crisis, the current constitutional crisis. And then I can't put it any more succinctly and perfectly than this. Here we go. Where I come from, this place called America, the Congress is responsible for decisions that write the fate of billions and trillions of dollars of taxpayer money. Once those responsibilities are instead just assumed by an individual, then we are in deep, deep trouble. It doesn't matter for what kind of quote good, when we have 535 people, most law school educated, being too weak or too political to understand the most fundamental aspects of balance of powers, too weak to insist that they're the ones who are to do the task assigned to them, and or too scared or weak to stand up for the clear and deliberate violation of those boundaries, such that a president, in order to, quote, fulfill a campaign promise, need merely make a $300 billion decision on his own, rather than having to restrict himself to the bully pulpit to persuade Congress and the people to duly pass laws surrounding it, we're in trouble. Honestly, when we allow this, let alone when we allow it with nary a peep from the would-be opposition, we are not America anymore. I am not a Republican, but example, a standing senator, one of the 600 or so most officially powerful people in the U.S., and probably one of the 10,000 or so in the world, tries to stand up for the Constitution merely by introducing legislation that says the president can't make the purse-string power of the Congress obsolete, rather than declare and openly shout about a constitutional crisis. A piece of legislation, by the way, that is of course not supported enough by other law school graduates who swore to uphold the Constitution because they think they're making political hay. More short-sighted, you could not be. It cannot be that Congress can be in, quote, gridlock because of disagreement of the detailed contents of appropriation and other related bills, a perfectly proper exercise of disagreement, and also that a president gets to bypass the entirety and his, quote, plan becomes practical law on the fate of $300 billion to $980 billion, Wharton School of Business estimate, in debt that will be, quote, forgiven by issuing more federal debt. I may be for such massive debt relief. I may ponder it further and decide I am not for it. But what I am against with the whole of my being is that one person gets to enact it using a wildly different interpretation of the Constitution than has ever been used previously. Truly, logic is lost. Favoritism and prosperity comes evermore from the whims of the king. Remember the good old days when the Patriot Act and W's administration's creative interpretation of enemy combatant was considered a constitutional crisis? We have never had a larger constitutional crisis. An individual is repeatedly assuming and consolidating powers, as in every cautionary tale of banana republics. But if a republic falls in the forest, but no one says anything, ... And I will add to that, as actually Kim and I have discussed recently, that here's the thing. This president, this non-elected president, I don't care what you say, the stats are overwhelming. And when I see stats that approach and then cross impossibility, let alone evidence backing up those stats, then I say what the truth is. He is an unelected president. This president said, I will wait for Congress. I have to wait for Congress. Obviously, I have to wait for Congress. But then after remember how he said, I will go ahead and force a vaccine on people. And he did. I mean, how could that decision not require legislation? And he forced a vaccine not only on healthcare workers, millions of people, all by himself. No legislature was necessary, but also upon any employers with over 100 people. Clearly unconstitutional, clearly beyond the scope of the president, who, oh, by the way, not only can't pass laws, but the most he can do is just veto a law. Hello, Schoolhouse Rock. The separation of powers is so obvious that in Schoolhouse Rock, and also in Schoolhouse Rock because it's in the Constitution, he doesn't get to make laws. The best he can do is merely veto a law. He certainly doesn't get to originate laws, not in the official sense. Even if he does become the champion of a law, which I think is an entirely bad idea, he doesn't get to be, he's not the one who even introduces it, let alone brings it through and champions it in Congress, because he's not in Congress. So yet he says, employers of over 100, we don't care if it's been a year and you've had a chance to be vaccinated. You will be vaccinated. Well, luckily it was challenged as the clearly unconstitutional act that it was. And the Supreme Court found it to be clearly unconstitutional because it is. And yet none of us are looking at that as just an assumption of power. Well, I'm going to take the power until you take it away from me. So you can say what you want about all these limits. I'm going to do what I want. And now, after a year of or longer of, I'm hoping Congress passes this. I don't really have the power. And you can find articles that say he didn't believe he had the power, therefore he's hoping Congress will pass it. And then he finally says, you know what? I'm doing it myself. I'm just doing it. The Wharton School of Business approximates this as a $300 billion to almost a $1 trillion decision over 10 years. and the president made it unilaterally. This is a constitutional crisis. No congressman, whether it's a senator or a representative, should be talking about anything except that. All right, guys, that's it for me. Thanks for listening.